And we sort of like slide in there, primarily there after the song or the sounds of Coldplay with the song Higher Power. And welcoming you once again to your particular early morning sessions here on your Sunday mornings primarily here on your number one talk radio station, that obviously being Eagle FM. And welcome, good morning once again, dear listeners, to my Sunday morning take, as we obviously do, and as we always step into these particular sessions every Sunday morning from 5 a.m. to 7 a.m. specifically. And if you've just woken up, I hope you are slightly more dosed up than me, specifically in terms of coffee or any particular warm beverage that obviously sort of like starts your day. Because the unfortunate thing is I only have a water bottle with me. But once again, good morning. Enjoy your particular cup of coffee, because we are also your cup of coffee at this particular moment. And stepping into the particular discussion developed for this morning. Now, an interesting thing specifically is, and this is obviously not a planned particular move, but the program you heard or the particular content you heard just before the ad break and the musical break specifically does find itself squarely within the discussion planned for this morning's engagement. But before we actually continue with our discussion and the introduction to listeners, we're going to take a short break and we're going to come back right after that.
Great news! Imba just got even better. We have added brand new features to make your experience smoother, faster, and more powerful than ever before. Ready to unlock the full potential of Imba? Get all exclusive features for just $36 Namibian a month, or save even more with our special subscription plans. 5% discount for 3 months subscription, 10% discount for 6 months subscription, and 25% discount for 12 months subscription. Choose the plan that works best for you and start enjoying everything Imba has to offer at an unbeatable price. Imba, where the world congregates. Download it and subscribe today.
You're now listening to My Sunday Morning Take, the show where we dive into everything history, everything geography, a little bit of science, and everything else in between to help you make sense of how it works around you from 5 a.m. to 7 a.m. every Sunday.
Now, coming back there from the quick ad break specifically, and once again, dear listeners, good morning, good morning, good morning. And stepping directly or immediately into our particular subject matter for this morning, which technically if does find itself or anchors itself in one part in the particular, content that you heard just before, not this ad break, the ad break at the start at the top of the hour at 5 a.m. Now, we obviously sit with a particular discussion in terms of the world, as well as also in our own little micro ecosystems, wherever we find ourselves. I'm talking micro ecosystems in the level of countries, individual countries in itself. And if you come specifically to the African context, you take a unique look at every particular country's unique particular interests, perspectives, challenges, problems, issues, opportunities, developments, and more. And then you take that particular, you know, the normal thing that geography learns us, you look at population dynamics, you look at population demographics, then you look at what sectors are the strong sectors, you look at what has been the historically longest serving sectors, and so forth and so forth, and what could be done more. And you obviously look at currency, you obviously look at where's the capital city, you obviously look at various particular things in and associated around those things. And then you try to understand, okay, what does the population makeup of the country look like? Are there various groups? Who's the largest? Who's the smallest? Where do they fit in? Can you identify things, for example, like advanced sectors and industries and the likes? Now, the last part that I mentioned, can you identify sectors and industries and the likes, you know, the economic activities, as well as also identifying which is the largest or the most practiced sector or the most pursued sector? Because in a Namibian context, it's pursued, you know, To say practice would be a bit odd because I am not in mining, even though I have heritage in mining, but I'm not in mining. When you take a look, when you do that particular, you know, analysis, specifically taking a look at what is within a country's particular unique makeup, the particular needs, the particular sectors that play a pivotal role in it, in their particular developments. The next thing you've got to do is go and look at national policies. Now, this is primarily where we find ourselves because across the African board, we, as Africans and as the African countries with their leaders, we face primarily a major cliff. So we're standing at the bottom of that cliff. We're not starting at the top of the cliff. No, we're not trying to fly or redefine the laws of gravity in any sense or in any case, because that obviously just means that gravity always wins if you're standing at the top of that cliff trying to be Icarus. But Icarus actually supposedly could fly. It's just that he flew too close to the sun. No, we're not doing that. The cliff that I'm talking about is the ability to climb that rock face, because you've got to overcome the thing. You've got to overcome it. We face this major cliff, which you can also define as a major mountain. But geography sometimes does not, you know, speak about you trying to fly. It speaks about you having to try and climb and, you know, traverse various kinds of terrain. Is that, and you'll find this even in NDB6, you'll find it in any piece of policy document, you'll find it across the board, across Africa, across the developing world, which also includes South America, and other parts of the developing world, is the discussion of modernization. But the word modernization is not the word that is used. No. The word modernization creeps up in various instances, in policy documents, in themes, in subject matter, in national projects, stuff like that. Why do I say this primarily? Well, here's the thing, dear listeners. I keep seeing that there is a particular growing concern amongst the African countries primarily to act like developed countries. Let me say it again. Developing countries who want to act developed, but they have still so much more work that they're still trying to do. Well, let's set the scene. The discussion takes a look at the concept of modernization. What is modernization? How do you see modernization? Where have you seen the best examples of modernization? Well, I'll tell you today. In many cases, for example, the recent discussion I had with the Chinese ambassador to Namibia, that being Ambassador Chao Wei-Ping, spoke of a modernization component. You go to, in an Asia context, South Korea, Japan, even the territory of Taiwan, they do have, or they have modernized their particular societies. But you still ask me, Dwight, what is modernization? Because modernization could be just you driving a car versus you 50 years ago riding a donkey. That could just be the aspect of modernization primarily in a Namibian context. Well, the unfortunate thing is, it's not as easy. Because modernization itself is actually the whole essence in terms of why we've got NDB's national development plans, as well as also the very essence in terms of why we got that Vision 2030 that we clearly could not define. Yes, and even the journalists of the day could not define this particular aspect at the time that Vision 2030 was introduced by the founding president. Obviously way back, you know, in sort of like his last particular presidential term at the time. And the discussion from there has never been broached. It has never been weighed upon. Why? Because in many cases, people were just fixated on jobs, 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 doing growth or achieving growth, but then the growth only manifests in one or two sectors, and that's it. So, introduction aside, dear listeners, we as an African continent, we face a major mountain. Or you can call it a cliff, because a cliff is more daunting than a mountain. At least with a mountain, you can see it from far and you can casually try to walk on it. But when it comes to a cliff, you've got to climb it. And not many of us are rock climbers. Understanding the particular concept of modernization, dear listeners, has to set the following scene in terms of what modernization tries to achieve. Modernization is the aspect of industrialization. If you go and read up that 2012 policy that the now non-existent Ministry of Industrialization and Trade had introduced when our third president, that being former President Kleinkop, was minister of that said ministry, he introduced the industrial policy of Namibia, or industrialization policy. And modernization is associated to industrialization. And modernization literally speaks of doing away with large-scale subsistence farming. Yes, we have still so many Namibians that do and practice subsistence farming. And then pushing them towards urbanization. So under the theory of modernization, and I'll still get to the particular sort of like definition of the term for you, but I just had to lay the groundwork there for you to get the meaning going or get the gist of that discussion so that you can understand primarily what is Namibia's particular problem. What it is. Now, coming to a sub-Saharan African analysis, and this is something I took from the Food and Agricultural Organization itself in terms of identifying characteristics for, about the region, the African region, because obviously in many cases, some of the multilateral bodies love splitting up Africa into various scenarios. So I am only sitting with a sub-Saharan African picture. I'm not sitting with a North African or a complete African view. So if you don't know what sub-Saharan Africa is, you take the Sahara Desert and anything below the Sahara Desert, all countries below it. That's the picture we're talking about. Now, it notes here that sub-Saharan Africa contains a total population of 626 million. This is at the time, just after 2018. Sub-Saharan Africa contains at least 626 million people, of whom 384 million people are classified as agricultural. That's more than half of the 626. 61% that it translates to. Now, the region is relatively well endowed with natural resources, but the total land area is 2,455 million hectares, of which 173,000 are under annual cultivation or permanent crops. About one quarter of that potentially arable surface area. Now, in their region as well, or in the region as a whole, the arid and semi-arid agro-ecological zones encompass about 43% of the land area. Now, the dry subhumid zone is equivalent to 13%, and the most subhumid and humid zones jointly account for at least 38%. That's in terms of within the 173 million hectares. That was the particular breakdown of the percentages in terms of, firstly, what kind of climates do you find in each of these zones in sub-Saharan Africa? And primarily, which portion of these particular zones, to what extent do they practice agriculture? In West Africa, 70% of the total population live in the moist, subhumid and humid zones, whereas in Eastern and Southern Africa, only about half of the population live in these particular areas. Now, despite the abundance of the natural resources, the average gross domestic product per capita in constant prices was lower at the end of the 1990s than in 1970. For example, 19 of the 25 poorest countries in the world are found in sub-Saharan Africa. 19 of the poorest 25. And income inequality is exponentially high. Approximately 16% of the region's population live in countries that have an average GDP per capita of less than $200. So that means the total value and the total output that that economy can achieve is $200 per person. That's 4,000 Namibian dollars if you did not know. 36% live in countries with an average GDP per capita of less than $300. And as many as 75% live in countries with an average GDP per capita below 400. So it's between the 300 and the $400 mark in terms of your the obvious highest spectrum in terms of these economic values for nations in the African in the sub-Saharan African region. In the region as a whole, an estimate of 43% of the total population fall below either the international dollar poverty line or below their nationally defined poverty lines. If you don't know what the national, international dollar poverty line is, it's at $10. So that's at $200 Namibian dollars. Yeah. And that's per day. The poverty line. And in East and Southern Africa, it is estimated that the rural poverty accounts for as much as 90% of total poverty. And although remote areas with marginal agricultural resources are poorer than the other places, they have a low population density and hence account for a relatively low proportion of total poor people. But you've got to watch out for the word poor again, dear listeners. Reason being that the word poor is primarily political. I've also had to go and think this over because primarily, yes, it's a new word, primarily, you only suffer deprivation. You are deprived from something. You're not poor of the something. You're deprived of the something. So, yeah. And I know deprivation sometimes sounds a little bit harsher, but yes. Now, in the context, in terms of what modernization is, after I set that scene for you specifically on the African continent, particularly Africa, and its modernization journey, because that is what the rest of the world wants to see Africa achieve to modernize. You have to ask the question, what is modernization? So modernization starts off with a very lovely one-line explainer here coming through from one of my literature resources that state, modernization in sociology is the transformation from traditional rural agrarian society to a secular urban industrial society. So if you guys forgot, in our, that's now Namibia's constitution booklet, it says there that Namibia is a secular state. Okay, so we achieved one of the particular requirements or descriptions there. Urban. Yes, we do have a lot of urban areas, for that matter. Industrial? Eish. Yeah. That is our biggest problem. How do you define the industriousness in a Namibian context? How do you define that? Primarily because we still have large rural agrarian and traditional societies in the country. I'll say it again. Large, rural, traditional and agrarian. Remember we've achieved a 50-50 split for the first time with our last national census. 50-50 split. As many people living in urban areas versus as many people living in the rural areas. But here's the thing. The rural areas in Namibia are underdeveloped. In many cases, the description you would sometimes find is that these are many, many cases communities or people that live in very remote areas. And the term remote implies that this is an area, that these are particular settlements and people and communities that you will not easily find. Because in many cases, there's not a road leading there. So when you look at this particular description, these particular identifiers and these particular signals, you get to understand that why Africa has a potential issue on its hand. This obviously stems from things like the recent Madagascar riots and protests. I call it riots and protests because the police tried to act and then the army showed up and then the army bullied the police and the police went like, oh, sharp guys. And things just went sideways from there. But at the heart of Madagascar's issue was water and electricity service provision, which are urban industrial needs. Let me say that again. Urban industrial needs. Now what happens again? And this is primarily one of the single most important questions that was never answered by the international news media who tried to cover the developments happening in Madagascar. No one asked anybody, why are they going on about water and electricity? Did they pay for it? Do they have access to it? Or is it just a demand coming through from the particular participants and organizers of this, of these demonstrations? Now, just put a bookmark in that conversation, because that's clearly a rhetorical question I'm positioning there, not to be answered, because I'm not going to answer the Madagascar discussion, because primarily, firstly, I'd need to have to understand French. And the second scenario is there's a lot more going on there. There's a lot more than ultimately what I see, and it's not being explained. But yeah, let's just put a bookmark in the Madagascar discussion. So when you start off in terms of viewing the particular cliff that a country like Namibia faces and that the rest of Africa face, is modernization is based upon that you have to achieve a modern society. So a modern society is an industrial society. This is the definitions provided by, for example, the discussions around many industrial policies around the world. What do people talk about? They don't talk about agriculture as much, but they factor in agriculture as part of the overall economic makeup. But when it comes to, like I said, when it comes to a sociology discussion, not an economics discussion, sociology identifies for you to modernize, you need large urban concentrations, and you need to push people from agriculture to urbanization. They need to go to school. They need to go to university. They need to go and look for jobs. They should not be working or tilling the land. This is currently everything that Namibia has on paper, wishes to achieve on paper by 2030. So supposedly wanted to achieve it by then. So we already have these documents, these policies that speak each in their own right to modernization. Each in their own right, from the education policies to the various business policies, even to the international relations policies. What's the other one? There's another one. I haven't seen a rural and urban development policy as yet, but it obviously is encapsulated specifically in the mass housing program of Namibia. Because you can only provide housing in urban areas, and urban areas are the particular growth centers identified by a national government. You will obviously also see specifically in the other spheres of the economy that the aim is to concentrate resources around urban areas. And that there's only two activities that can take place in rural community settings: agriculture and mining. Now, you have the scene. You know what the table looks like. You know what the table has been set with in a Namibian context. And you can literally replicate that table in many African countries, even into South Africa. Even into South Africa. But here's the thing that South Africa has in abundance. South Africa has more than one city. South Africa has hundreds of small towns and towns and larger towns. You can actually tier them from small towns, large towns, tiny towns, but they've got thousands of these towns across the country. Whereas you can only think of Otjiwarongo and Okahania as major urban centers in Otjotlanjupa. Windhoek is just Windhoek. For some reason, the powers that be obviously thought about Windhoek and then decided Windhoek must be this only entity in the whole of KOMAS. And specifically, if you look at the growth rate that Windhoek is experiencing, the municipality, the city of Windhoek, will have to break up into smaller pieces in order to deal with various demands and various service provision challenges in future. We're not talking about it in 2030. We're talking about probably 20 years from now, 25 years from now. It'll be these particular challenges that we've faced. Here's the thing, guys. It will become more and more challenging to extend water infrastructure. It will become more and more challenging potentially to extend electrical infrastructure or electricity infrastructure, for example, just in the city of Windhoek. They will have to break those things up into smaller pieces so that the service provision itself can be at a healthy, acceptable or sufficient level to the various particular client areas. And thus, the service provision would then dictate that specifically the whole of city of Windhoek, I'm talking about the local authority, would have to break up into smaller pieces in terms of meeting those particular growth needs that Windhoek will face. You can see it's on the, you can see it, you can literally see it happening in real life. Not the breaking up, I'm talking about the growth. And the growth will demand that the council, the local authority, is just not in the best fit to meet this particular growth trend. I'll tell you today why. Well, if you take a city like Windhoek, Windhoek is technically bigger than, not in population, in surface area, than a city like New York. Windhoek is bigger than a city like New York. But there are more than 10 million people in New York. How? Oh, Windhoek is, in surface area. Windhoek is massive, guys. We step off from that particular indicator, primarily because to modernize a society, first of all, you need to industrialize the society. Historically, the rise of modern societies have been linked with the emergence of the industrial society. All the features that are associated with modernity can be shown to be related to the set of changes that, for example, 250 years ago, brought into being the industrial type of society. This also suggests that the terms industrialism and industrial society imply far more than the economic and technological components that make up their core, being that industrialism is a way of life that encompasses the economic, social, political, and cultural changes. It is by also undergoing this particular transformation, you know, this modernization transformation of industrialization, that societies become modern. I will cite to you one of the particular challenges as to why this sometimes looks very difficult. And you even see it in certain particular discussions across Africa where academics and public figures and public speakers have come out and said, you know, they don't like this modernization trend. Don't worry, guys. We as Africans, we're not the only ones that have said we don't like this modernization trend. Primarily, because it was a trend specifically that moves too fast. It's a thing that moves too fast. But in many cases, if you are a Windhoek native like myself, you would have already seen modernization. And I mean, let's take it on the aspect of just, cultural identity as well. Many of you that know of, families or family members that moved to urban areas, for example, like Windhoek. They live here, they work here, they marry here, they have kids here. The kids, you would assume, because your family member or your friend, you guys come from the same rural community back then, you know, like 20, 30 years back, that the kids of this particular individual would then share the same particular beliefs, the same particular perspectives. You know, be as strong in the mother tongue, like their parents. And then when the child goes and visits family in the rural communities, the child can barely say a word in the mother tongue, can only speak English left, right, and center, and can only primarily, wants entertainment similar to the entertainment that they find and had been accustomed to in the urban setting. That's one of the indicators of the modernization. Those are one of the particular challenges, for example, that various generations find between each other. Guys, I grew up in a particular period where it was fine to have, what's that thing's name? A lamp, an oil lamp for light on the farm, you know, as basic, you know, for basic lighting on the farm. I grew up with that particular technology. I didn't find it at any particular time frame as a discomfort to switch off or to step away from anything modern or any technologies and just sit around the fire, just sitting there. Just, you know, experiencing nature and, you know, rural settings for that particular beauty. But the moment my cousins married, they had wives and husbands and children, the first particular thing was obviously, you could see from their indication, is that they started demanding, you know, we want to be able to make phone calls from the rural community. We want this, we want that, we want lights, we want to see things. At nighttime, can't we install better lighting infrastructure in these particular cities? You start hearing those conversations. Now, modernization is obviously also tied highly to consumerism. If you did not know, it's tied very highly to consumerism because it helps to define whether or not what you produce is consumed by the local population. Which is one of the things that Namibia tries to achieve, is a modern society. But to achieve that modern society, you have to be able to produce things for that modern society. And that modern society has to produce things for themselves as well. I know. I literally took you to Tsumkwe with that explanation. Now, modernization is a continuous and an open-ended process because you don't know when it ends. You literally don't know when it ends. Historically, the span of time over which it has occurred must be measured particularly in centuries. For yes, which is true. If you look at the European context, if the Europeans had peace for more than 5 to 10 years, the modernization aspect obviously sped up exponentially within that. But obviously the greatest beneficiaries of modernization were the, predominantly the United Kingdom, and then France, and then America. Yeah, and then America. And Canada. You can also put Canada there. Another one was obviously also Japan. Japan actually went through civil wars because of modernization. And it's from basic things that they went through a particular civil war. I don't know if you guys remember the movie by Tom Cruise, The Last Samurai. Primarily, and that's the beauty of sometimes of what some movie makers do. They try to tell you a human story, but then they make it so entertaining. You don't easily observe the true essence of the story. So the true essence of the story was tradition versus modernization in that movie, The Last Samurai. If you ever watch the movie again, just look at primarily what the character of Tom Cruise faced specifically. He lived obviously with a local Japanese daimyo. A daimyo is a nobleman. And he was set in this particular agrarian, rural, agricultural, agrarian and agriculture, same context. But in this rural context, which was technically their hideout because this particular political leader, played by Ken Watanabe, he had to flee from his own, you know, castle or his own property. So he was hiding in the mountains. So that's a rebel hideout. Yes, I know. The setting from there was much of the discussion was based upon an actual event in history in Japan, which was based upon there were traditionalists, meaning it was a system of the feudal system of Japan versus the modernization that the Emperor of Japan wanted to introduce. So at one stage, this Emperor of Japan sailed all the way to Europe, went and understood the various philosophies and discussions taking place in Europe, sailed back, and he brought forward this rapid industrialization, rapid modernization, knowledge, literally by telling the Japanese, you've got to do it the Japanese way. So you've got, if you wish to be a naval power, you've got to build steamships, not show up with a wooden ship specifically for defending national shorelines. You've got to incorporate new technologies, upscale things, in terms of urban life and all that, find a balance primarily between the agricultural communities and the particular national needs of the country. It shouldn't be one particular lord or feudal lord deciding the future of people in his particular territory, which was one of the concerns that was actually cited, is that these particular feudal lords saw that their way of life was under threat. Now, before we continue, we're quickly going to take a short break, dear listeners. We're going to come back right after that, and then obviously head into the second part of today's program here on your number one talk radio station. This is my Sunday morning take, and it is here on Eagle FM. And you're in my company from 5 a.m. to 7 a.m.
I love you.
Sure.
Started, you
creature void of form. Been so afraid of everything. I need a chance to be reborn. I never wanted anything that someone had to give. Think about the old days, baby. You're always on my mind. I know it ain't like I remember. I guess my memory is run wild. Like when we went to see Bob Dylan. We danced to Desolation Row. But I don't live here anymore. But I got no place to go.
Goeie nuus, Imba het nou nog beter geword. Ons het splinternuwe funksies bygevoeg om jou ervaring vinniger, beter en kragtiger te maak as ooit tevore. As jy gereed om die volle potensiaal van Imba te geniet, kry alle eksklusiewe funksies vir slegs $36 per maand of spaar selfs meer met ons spesiale intekenplanne. 5% afslag vir 'n 3 maande intekening, 10% afslag vir 'n 6 maande intekening en 25% afslag vir 'n 12 maande intekening. Kies die beste plan vir jou werk en geniet al die voordele wat Imba bied teen 'n onverbeterlike prys. Imba, waar die wêreld saamkom, laai dit af en teken vandag aan.
Although you've taken everything.
back there from the sound specifically of the War Against Drugs with the song I Don't Live Here Anymore. And before that was once again just a little bit of Simply Red. I know, guys, I'm a Simply Red fan. But nonetheless, it brings us up to the midway point, which is obviously the second half of this morning's session of my Sunday Morning Take. And where we primarily left off with the discussion on modernization has been what is at its core. Now, citing obviously that it's in a continuous process, there is no time frame of when it stops or when it ends, meaning it's open-ended. Primarily is that the first instances of modernization that we obviously would have seen was about 250 to almost 300 years back. Why? Because it obviously started showing instances in terms of where people were inventing and creating things. And this was born from mining and then tried to achieve various particular new developments and needs. And much of it was associated to becoming industrial. Now, there also seems to be a dynamic principle that is built into the very idea of modern societies that does not allow them to settle or to achieve equilibrium, meaning you reach just, this is the level that you reach and that's what you need to achieve. No, it still goes on further. You don't know where it goes to. And the idea behind it is this also speaks towards the consumption trends associated towards or around these modern societies. So you don't just have one or two shoes or pairs of shoe. No, you need to have five or six pairs of shoes. No, you don't just have one or two pairs of trousers. No, you need to have four pairs of trousers. You need to have six shirts and 17 t-shirts. And you need to be buying some of these things every month, which means you need to be working for a company, or you need to have a job, or you need to be self-sufficient that generates money, enough money for you to buy these things on a regular basis. There is no, you know, like plateau. There is no stop to that level of consumption. Now, the development of these modern societies is always irregular and it's always uneven. Doesn't matter the level of development, because there is always a description or an idea or sort of like a contrast to say, it's always a comparison discussion that there are backward regions and also peripheral groups associated or found within the modernization discussion. And this is also deemed as a persistent source of strain and conflict in the modern societies. You would even sometimes see it here in Namibia in terms of voting trends, voting in terms of election trends. In many cases, I remember back to, was it the 2019 presidential elections, where there was the vote that won, that won President Geingob, his second term, was predominantly the local authority vote. The rural vote. And you will obviously see, you would sometimes also see in Namibian discourse, there is this sort of like, us and them description or discussion in terms of Namibians in urban centers and Namibians in the rural communities. You get it. Don't worry, guys. I've heard it. I've seen it in multiple scenarios, and I know that some of you would have seen it, and some of you have encountered this particular description, this particular description as well, which paints a rather odd talking point in its own right. Now, this particular condition has not been clearly defined. Specifically towards internal development of individual states or individual provinces or regions and the likes. It can also be seen on a global scale, as modernization also extends outwards from its original Western base. And that's obviously taken into the whole world, or to be adopted by the whole world. The existence of unevenly and unequally developed nations introduces fundamental elements of instability into the world system of these particular states. Now, modernization also seems to have two main phases. Up to a certain point in its course, it carries the institutions and the values of society along with it. So what are the institutions? So you say it's firstly the branches of governance. So that's the executive, that's the legislative, and that's the judiciary. Then you get to other institutions. Okay, what do you have? We've got a police, that's safety and security. You've got private sector, so that represents industry and commerce. And then you have a very strong religious base. So you say, okay, so most of your values obviously would come from the religious base. And then you look at the community settings and then you get a little bit of a fuzzy picture there, because then you've got a split between rural and urban. It's no longer a discussion on skin color. It's literally now a discussion in terms of who's ruler, who's urban in Namibia. Literally. It's not even discussion on skin color, guys. And that's also primarily some of the discussions specifically that when I sometimes go and sit and observe the sessions of parliament, I sometimes don't understand what the MPs are talking about. I know we've got a new batch of MPs now, and I know I've got to give them, what do you call that word, allowance for getting used to the, you know, the setting that they are contributing to or participating in. But the unfortunate setting is every time we literally have people that I don't understand if they read or not. But yeah. So on this particular discussion of modernization, groups tend to make escalating demands on the economy. Or not the economy, the community. And these particular demands become increasingly difficult to meet. So you have, and this usually comes from the commerce and sometimes also from the political groups in the country. So you want a broad-based, broadly accessible healthcare system. And then later on, the government realized with that particular demand that they will have to start coaching the population to eat healthier, to try and live healthier, and to try and look after themselves so that the financial burden of curing, you know, ailments is alleviated. Because later on, some planners and some national leaders will start saying, but people are living unhealthy lives. Why are you spending money on people who are actively doing this to themselves? Which is just a fair question. Or you will have a scenario in terms of the private sector or the commercial part of your economy saying, if you want to see further economic growth in your country, Namibians must finish grade 12. And they must go to university. And then things go on for like a couple of 10 years at least. No, not 20 years. Like not a couple of 10-year sessions. Just what I just meant to say is just, you know, a couple of years to 10 years. So it's 5 to 10 years. And then they realize, and then the private sector comes back and says, we want to bring in these new technologies and things, but, we see that Namibians in your education system, are not adequately trained to, you know, to work on these things. So we want you to then say in your national policy, Namibians must now go to university. And we can't work with a Namibian going to vocational training center. So we just want Namibians who went to university. And then it gets updated, the policy document, it gets motivated, and then it gets rolled out if it's approved as is. And then you have, once again, okay, now as a Namibian, you must go to university. And you must pursue certain particular courses for certain particular employment avenues. If you guys don't also realize what happens in modernization, is that there's a lot of planning in modernization. And there's a, you know, obviously a lot of tweaking as well. So I use the education sector because it's the easiest one that's the easiest identified, primarily because that is sometimes what happens. Just to give you a clear-cut example in terms of the last 30... No, let's make it the last 45 years. So I'm taking it up to 1980. So I once... And this is even born from an interesting point of discussion. Just yesterday, specifically... my sister and I, we spoke about, you know, okay, actually first she told me a joke about something that happened. It was a story that she read specifically on a millennial. So I am a millennial myself, and this woman in the United States, but it's an American story. So it's not easily adaptable to Namibia because the same setting doesn't exist. But before we continue, guys, we're quickly going to take a short break and we're going to come back right after it.
Great news! Imba just got even better. We have added brand new features to make your experience smoother, faster, and more powerful than ever before. Ready to unlock the full potential of Imba? Get all exclusive features for just 36 Namibian dollars a month, or save even more with our special subscription plans. 5% discount for 3 months subscription, 10% discount for 6 months subscription, and 25% discount for 12 months subscription. Choose the plan that works best for you and start enjoying everything Imba has to offer at an unbeatable price. Imba, where the world congregates. Download it and subscribe today.
Coming back there from the quick break, dear listeners. So just where we left off, I was giving you a particular case study once again. So the story at the heart of it was that a woman in the US, she is a millennial. Her parents are boomers. If you don't know what a baby boomer is the generation after the silent generation. The silent generation are the guys that went to the Second World War, that fought in the Second World War. A lot of them got killed. So we obviously, if you know who I'm talking about, okay, let's say our founding president was from the silent generation in terms of just the time frame, the years, you know, when the period that he was born in, and that which he grew up in. And obviously, as you can see, when he brought out Vision 2030, guess what we were told as men? Go and have as many babies, which is a boomer thing, which is what the boomers did in the 50s and the 60s. People just had a whole bunch of kids. Now, if you did not realize this, nor did you recognize this, this is what helps modernization. Firstly, you've got local authorities that dispense services like water, refuse removal, sewage removal, wastewater, solid waste, provide electricity, servicing of properties for various particular categories and uses. And the idea from this is they try to lock in families. So the baby boomer period, or the generation of the baby boomers, ultimately saw this as an attractive proposition, and most of them settled in local authorities. So it was a push away from, it was a pull effect from rural to urban migration. What don't you get in rural areas? You don't get a local authority in a rural area. Now remember, dear listeners, 3 weeks back, or 2 weeks, yeah, 3 weeks back, I asked the Chinese ambassador in terms of how did China have to deal with this rural-urban development discussion. In a Chinese context, they position the similar services that you find in a large local authority within the vicinity of those rural communities, which are predominantly agricultural and agrarian communities, they position services close to them. And I've always tried to think, how does that happen? I mean, how do you bring a service to someone that lives 5 to 10 to 15 kilometers away from a town? Because with every meter of water, you know, the water pipe that you lay to that person's, let's call it to their homestead or to their farmhouse, it creates an issue. It creates an issue because the costing department of that entity, let's for example say it's NamWater, and there's now a national policy document that NamWater now has to follow. This is hypothetical. And NamWater now has to lay, what do they call that water level? But it's water for human consumption, you know, that you attach to a house so the person can have taps in their house and that they can have a shower in their house and so that they can have a toilet also flushing, you know, with the same water supply. If they now did that for many farms, many rural communities across the country, NamWater would then go and measure how many meters of pipes did we have to install. That's your first cost problem. If it's on a NamPower scenario, and let's say NamPower has to now meet or expand that rural electrification policy of theirs, and they go look at that policy and now it says every farm, whether it be commercial or communal, every rural community, every homestead must have electricity. And they go and do their calculation in terms of, okay, how many meters of wiring do we have to lay? And how many meters of cable do we have to install? And how many this and how many that? And then literally they will sit with a bill just on the installation part of things. Not them making the thing, making electricity. Just on the installation, you know, having teams of men digging trenches for the cables to be laid down. It will later on look like a very high bill. A very high bill. So you obviously get the understanding behind this, primarily why you still see the disparity in the Namibian context of Namibia's own modernization pathway as to what is actually going on. Slow rate of service provision and providing and projects in the rural communities forces rural communities to move to urban areas. It's a clear-cut thing. Because here's the scenario. Use those two hypothetical examples of the NamWater, NamPower discussions, and then go and think to yourself, do you think it would become affordable for those communities to pay for the water and to pay for the electricity? If NamPower has a very nice particular, let's call it, rate for rural, no, not rural, urban, for urban areas. So we're talking about the known clients is obviously regional electricity distributors and local authorities and mining companies, which is the whole basis and the main reason for the infrastructure. To first serve the known clients, the known customers. Same thing for NamWater. They literally have a similar, their developmental roles are similar. These two entities, even though they also play a great role in managing infrastructure and managing demand. You then sit with a setting in terms of, okay, internally, within the internal Namibian demographics and broader population distribution, you're sitting with conflicting scenarios. So every year, just like in this year, not every year, sorry, every 5-year cycle, we have to vote for local and regional authorities, not presidential elections, local and regional. But in the local and regional context, you will now start seeing many, in particular, Namibians coming out, and we're literally a month away. Yeah, we're literally a month away from next month's elections. Where you will specifically hear of Namibians that will cite, no, but, the last time I voted for that councillor was in my face every day building up to the particular election day. And when I voted that specific party for that specific councillor, they just went silent for 5 years. They are still silent and they only started campaigning in this year. But I didn't see them for the other 4 years. You'll hear Namibians say things like that. You'll hear them say things like that. Now, it obviously illustrates the, firstly, dissatisfaction on one end, but the conflict that already exists between urban and rural communities of this country. Why does the conflict already exist? Well, here's the thing. There's a statement I keep making on the home run. I don't like seeing towns. I don't like seeing certain areas look the same as they looked when my parents and my grandparents were alive. Things are supposed to move forward. So specifically, I'm sitting here with a modernization template in my head. I have seen other societies advance forward. Obviously, you need to manage that advancement, because there's a few things you don't want to lose. That you literally don't want to lose a few things. And at the height of modernization, or let's call it the highest negative point of modernization, is that you start having large parts of your population saying, I don't want children. Which is now the issue that South Korea faces, Japan faces, much of Europe faces. North America, or the United States, doesn't talk about it as much, but they themselves also have an issue there. But when you look at that trend, it becomes problematic. Why does it become problematic? Well, it's a highly urbanized these are highly urbanized populations, highly skilled populations, in highly competitive economic settings, with access to as many products and services that are just positioned close to them. And at the heart of it, many of the people are saying, you know what? I don't see the need for marriage. Or I don't see the need to have kids. Then alarm bells start ringing, because the basis of the template of modernization was based upon the notion that, okay, you now have a job, you now have all these other particular things, so now the next logical step would be you go marry and then you have 2.5 children on average. On average. However, challenge and response are the essence of the modern societies. If you consider its nature and its development, what stands out initially, at least, is not so much the difficulties and the dangers as the extraordinary success with which modern society has mastered the most profound and far-reaching revolution in human history. Now, primarily, dear listeners, when you look at these particular things, the processes of modernization, industrialization, from general and primarily sociological point of view, you see how these two particular concepts of industrialization and modernization are intertwined and literally merge and start looking like the same thing. Reason being, to modernize means you are bringing in new technologies, new methods, new ways of doing things, and you are enhancing livelihoods, or you are enhancing processes, or you are enhancing various systems that are currently viewed as potentially being outdated. Namibia's laws, for one, is one of those said systems. Now, the phenomena of industrialization and modernization that are taken to have begun more than 2 centuries, 200 years ago, and that would not until much later identify as distinct and novel concepts, have not yet arrived at any recognizable closure, meaning it has not ended. So the modernization just continues to grow and continues to build and continues to advance. You will still obviously not see any end in sight, because here's the thing. If you have to imagine all of human social evolution and you put it on a 12-hour clock, then the modern industrial epoch or the modern industrial phase represents the last 5 minutes and no more. If you have to look at humanity from a human development aspect, the other 55 minutes was us going from the various hominid variants, reaching Homo sapien level. And then everything that has happened so far that you see today is the last 5 minutes on that clock. Because for more than half a million years, so that's 500,000 years, small bands of what we may agree were human beings had roamed the earth as hunters and gatherers with simple stone tools and social orders based on kinship, meaning family ties. We take an ad break, dear listeners, and come back right after this.
Save and win at WB in the Pick a Box birthday promo. Enter today with your Smart Buy card. Get 4 kg Cadilla mixed chicken for $189.99. 1 kg pasta grande spaghetti for $19.99. 750 gram Nola mayo for just $37.99. And 2 kg sunlight hand wash powder for only $52.99. Learn more about Pick a Box at www.vurmanbrock.com. T's and C's apply. We care.
So we come back to listeners from the short break right there. And obviously human development in its own side, in its own right, has predominantly been about the evolutionary parts of things for humans. And primarily what you see for the past 3 to 6,000 years has been, as mentioned a little bit earlier, the last five minutes. So that's, you know, that's 5 to 12, literally. Because about 10,000 years ago, some of these hunter-gatherers took up cultivating the earth and domesticating animals. And it was this particular process that is what sometimes, what is somewhat also misleadingly called the Neolithic period or the Neolithic revolution, because they went from being hunter-gatherers to literally becoming pastoralists and also becoming cultivators and deciding to live in permanent positions instead of roaming around and moving about. You know, obviously following their food or, you know, migrating as the animals are migrating, they migrate as well. And the Neolithic revolution obviously was that, the implications that new stone tools were at the root of this vast particular change and new ways of living. And it's also now generally accepted that the new technologies was not the principal factor, but regardless, what took place was a revolution because small bands or small mobile bands became settled village communities. The development of the plow raised the productivity of land to a thousandfold. And in response, the human population of the planet increased dramatically because obviously there's now some groundedness. There's some, predictability and there's now this particular need. Okay. Let's just continue going on with this particular practice. On top of this, herding and agriculture for the first time created surplus amounts of food. Now, this allowed some members of the population to also abandon subsistence activities and to become artisans, merchants, priests, and bureaucrats. So they obviously took up different roles, different professions, different particular kinds community roles. But yeah, technically, yeah, community roles. Now, the particular division of labor took place, this particular division of labor took place in a newly concentrated physical environment. They constructed an urban area. They all live in the same urban area. In the 4th millennium BCE, cities started growing.
And with them came trade, markets, governments, laws, and armies. So you once take it a step up. The technology and the social organization of the Neolithic Revolution remained the basis of all civilizations until the coming of industrialism. Supposedly with few additions that were made. The invention of the stirrup was an important one. If you don't know what a stirrup is, it's a little thing on someone who's a horse rider. It helps them to, increase speed with the horse, to make the horse run faster. It's attached to your shoe at the back of your heel. If you've ever watched cowboy movies, the cowboys always wear stirrups. But when we obviously look at this particular development, the stirrup itself is something that served as an ancient Mesopotamia and ancient Egypt. It served a role there. Of the 3rd and the 2nd millennium BC, it served as the foundation of the states and obviously the empires of the ancient world, from China and India to Greece and Rome. And it also served equally during the European Middle Ages, with in some respects, notably in technology, it actually fell back from the achievements of the ancient world. Not until the 17th and 18th centuries in Europe did humankind make another leap, literally comparable to the Neolithic Revolution, primarily where, they obviously brought in new particular technologies and advanced new particular systems and processes at that time. In many cases, it was obviously also born from maritime travel, meaning sailing by sea, going to being able to travel further distances on the oceans and the like. Now, it's also against this very slow evolutionary background that the revolution that underlay modernity should actually be recognized, because it is one of just two quantum jumps, as identified by my authors, that human evolution had made since the primal hunting and the gathering stage of the early Homo sapiens. So the Neolithic or the agricultural revolution produced urban civilizations. Very weird, because people clustered around this new food, abundant food source. They created urbanization. The Industrial Revolution lifted humankind or humanity onto a new plane of technological development that vastly increased the scope for transforming the material environment. You can build roads, you can lay down railway lines, you can build cars for those roads or locomotives for those railway lines, and so on and so forth. And obviously it meant that a lot of goods are needed, a lot of resources need to be invested, and it takes tons of money to do this, which is another thing that they created as well. Now, in its speed and its scale, the change brought about the Industrial Revolution and has had indeed a great impact on human life than the Neolithic Revolution. The Neolithic civilization remained throughout confined by a sharply limited technical and economic base. Industrial civilization knows no such limits. There is no technical limit. Look at the modern human. Look at the modern Namibian even. There is no technical limit. It is now expected of you to be able to drive a car, so you need to own a license, to be able to work with a computer, no license needed, to be able to work with the technologies on the computers, to be able to master the usage of your mobile phone, which is also another computer, and to be able to also know the functions of other technologies around you, like smart TVs, and the discussion about what happens to your internet speed and how that gets discussed or dissected. And all of these particular indicators, dear listeners, are things born from, firstly, more investment into skills, more investment into knowledge, more investment of the generation of the skills and knowledge,
and their transference. And you can literally see that this is a rinse and repeat process every time. And like I said a little bit earlier, there is no plateau for modernization. You just continue. You just continue. Obviously, discussion on everyone's lips has now been, how does AI factor into everything? Even though people in the world are realizing that AI is becoming a bubble. Or it's literally a bubble and they're just waiting for it to burst. But the bursting has a time frame on it because, yeah, what happens to a bubble? Bubble has a threshold. If you don't know what I'm talking about, just go read up on a whole bunch of articles coming out of the tech field, the financial tech field, as well as also other particular discussions of around tech itself. And we are supposedly on track for another major economic crash. They don't know if it's still going to happen in this year or not, but it is expected in the coming years. So it's from 2025 to 2027, maybe. And this economic crash will be in the tech sector. There's already comparisons that the dot-com bubble of the 90s of internet companies versus the tech bubble, which is now being seen in the AI sphere of things, have similarities, and it's starting to look very, 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 very dodgy. Very, very dodgy. But yeah, just giving you that overlay right there specifically. We'll quickly take a short break, dear listeners, and we're going to come back right after this.
Let's take our time. Thank you.
too long, the songs on the radio sound the same. Everybody just looks the same, but then last night was so much fun. And now your sheets are dirty, the streets are dirty too. But you never look back over what you've done. Remember when you were young, you'd lose yourself. In the morning, you know we won't remember a thing. Boy can't help it, it's not his fault. Just a dangerous, dangerous age. Then every night's still so much fun. And you're still out there, darling, clinging on to the wrong ideas. But I never regret anything I've done. Remember when you were young, you'd lose yourself. In the morning, you know you won't remember a thing.
Remember something when you wake up in the morning. And on that particular note, dear listeners, well, once again, if you've just woken up, good morning, good morning, good morning. You know, not gonna say anything bad. However, dear listeners, the important thing, just where we left off in terms of the last 12 minutes that we still have on this morning session here on my Sunday morning take, is obviously that you saw this particular process go about. Now, yes, when it comes to the modernization discussion, you have to identify what's at the heart of modernization. Namibia wants to industrialize. How does Namibia go about industrializing? The actual only particular pathway you can see is, first and foremost, Namibia has to try and push rural communities to migrate to urban centers. Grow the urban center, services get positioned in the urban center, and the urban center generates its own particular economic value and contributions, so that it leaves very small populations in the rural areas. Now, just from what I explained to you, will obviously make you and many people in Namibia very worried, because in many cases, rural communities is defined, for example, where they find their traditional leaders, where they find family, where they find ways of life in terms of, you know, things that they find very personal to. But in many cases, the rural communities do not provide the same services or not the rural communities, but the rural areas cannot provide the same services or dispense the same services similar to what the urban settings can do. It thus creates this conflict scenario of who is best and who is better. Obviously, Namibia is still in its sort of like growing pains era. I mean, it took the US, 100 years before, you know, they actually had everything installed. Also, obviously on the back of a lot of inequality in its own right. We're not going to jump down that rabbit hole as well, because like I said, each country has a unique dimension to it in terms of its own character traits and character makeup. The downside is obviously you don't want the rural communities, rural areas, obviously, to die away. So services would have to be brought to them. Investments into rural areas and rural communities would have to take place. One of them is one of the things that I've actually pointed out to specifically. For example, like in, for tourism to be truly enjoyed across the country, is that local authorities in the vicinities of these rural communities have to go and invest there. You have to go and build something that looks like a street sign and grade and clear the road and install proper infrastructure that everyone can say, hey, this adds value. And you put up a sign here and a sign there and a street light here and a street light there. Basic things. It's things in that order. But obviously someone will have to pay for what has been installed there, right? 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 You know, just making sure. Just letting you know, someone has to pay. It's not a freebie situation. Someone has to pay. When it comes to also the rural community or rural development discussion, there's also another particular, unsatisfactory reality. Many cases, factories are not found in the rural communities. They're not. In many cases, processing plants, factories, refineries, all those particular elements and installations are concentrated close to urban settlements. Why must your workers drive 5 hours into the bush just to go work there at a refinery or at a factory? No. You keep the factories and those processing plants close to urban settings. Now we quickly take a live read, dear listeners, and from there we will get into a musical break that'll literally lead us up to the end of this morning's session. Why pay more when you can pay less at USave? 400 milliliter Dawn hand and body lotion or cream for just $29.99. 350 milliliters trusted Palmolive shampoo and conditioner for $38.99 each. Lovey's premium disposable nappies for $133.99. Oh, any 2 1-kilogram bags of Sunlight 5-in-1 hand washing powder for $58. Save $2. You save, I save, we all save at You Save. Now, quickly coming back there from that short ad break, just ending it on this particular important point for our discussion before we step into that last musical break, is that when you've got a look at understanding where modernization stems from, is that primarily it stems from a setting of trying to advance productivity, firstly. It tries to advance knowledge, secondly, and tries to advance, for example, also the way of life, you know, the way of how things are done and so forth. Because The understanding of a grading society is essential to the analysis of an industrial society, because it is largely through the contrast with its agrarian past that a modern society stands out. The meaning of the modern is to be found in as much in what it renounces, meaning the opposite of what it does not want to do, as in what it tries to do or aspires to do. And obviously, this is some of the particular takeaways, dear listeners, that you can identify even in your immediate vicinity in terms of looking at, go talk to your parents. Yeah, best example. Go try and go talk to your parents or your grandparents and ask them, where did they grow up? How did they grow up? How did they play? How did they interact? And versus what you do today and how you interact today. On that particular note, dear listeners, we step into the musical break that'll potentially take us up to the top of the hour at 7 a.m. From there, we'll say our good mornings once again, not our goodbyes, but you'll be able to still listen to the wonderful programming that Eagle FM obviously provides every Sunday after my Sunday morning take.